Township Board of Education will now come to order. Time, Mr. Polkowski?
7:34 PM.
Thank you. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, Laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through public notice on January 17, 2019, faxing to three newspapers designated by the board, the Hunterdon County Democrat, Hunterdon Review, and Express Times. Also posting on the district website, the main bulletin board, in the administration offices, and in each Clinton Township school. And finally, faxing to the clerk of Clinton Township. May we have a roll call, please?
Sure. Ms. Grant?
Here.
Ms. Brennan?
Present.
Ms. Brooks?
Here.
Ms. Emery?
Present.
Dr. Grantham?
Here.
Mr. Malloy?
Here.
Ms. Olosky?
Here.
Dr. Rehumaki?
Here. Thank you. Mr. Malloy, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Yes.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ms. Olosky, will you serve as the process guardian
for
this evening's meeting? Thank you. We're going to start the meeting off this evening with swearing in a new board member, Mr. Scott Torres, this morning. Can you please stand? Do you have
We'll have him turn it up. Thank you.
This evening we have a special guest with us. His name is Mr. Kevin Craig. Mr. Craig will speak with us this evening about school safety and how to create a culture of security. First, I have a little bit of background on Mr. Craig. He is recognized as a subject matter expert in law enforcement, management, and school security. He is a retired New Jersey police chief, has over 30 years of experience in public safety, emergency management, and school security. He is a licensed private detective and is certified as a public manager, police instructor, school safety specialist, and school resource officer in New Jersey. Chief Craig holds a master's degree in public administration with a specialization in school security and safety administration. He has represented New Jersey State Association of Chiefs of Police on the New Jersey K-12 Task Force in conjunction with the Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and was appointed to the New Jersey Security Task Force by the Governor of New Jersey as a subject matter expert. In addition to being a certified instructor in active shooter response, de-escalation, and threat assessment, Chief Craig is an instructor for the New Jersey School Safety Specialist Academy in the New Jersey Department of Education, a member of the ASIS International School Safety and Security Council, an advisory board member, and senior instructor for the New Jersey Association of School Resource Officers. Throughout his law enforcement career and beyond, Chief Craig has conducted trainings, plannings, and assessments for public and private schools, businesses, and faith-based institutions. He is regularly consulted as a subject matter expert on. Mr. Craig, welcome this evening.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everybody. I was asked to come and give a brief kind of overview about school safety and security, generally some best practices and some emerging best practices that schools in all over the state and all over the country are either implementing or considering implementing. So some of the things I'm going to talk about tonight are either in practice here in Clinton Township or under consideration. But make no mistake, these are recommended best practices nationally. So while my presentation will talk about some things that touch on some things that are being considered here or in practice here in Clinton Township, these are best practices that are ongoing throughout the state of New Jersey and nationally. So the title of my presentation is Creating a Culture of Security. So basically what schools are looking to do now, and I don't think there's any school administrator in the state of New Jersey or otherwise that's not looking at school safety and security as a top priority in their district. So anytime we see these unfortunate incidents where there's things going on, most often we see incidents of targeted mass violence in schools. The headlines, or the interviews with superintendents and board members always kind of indicate that school safety is our top priority. And that goes whether there's an actual incident in the school or a threat or some other response that's required by a school district. So. So this is my background. The board president just gave a pretty good overview, so I'm not going to go into that any further. My background primarily, though, is in law enforcement, 25 years in law enforcement. I retired as the chief of police. One of the things that I'm most proud of is my appointment to the New Jersey School Security Task Force by the governor of New Jersey. So in that capacity, I had the opportunity to work with a lot of other law enforcement agencies, Homeland Security and Preparedness, educators from all over the state. And we reached out beyond the state of New Jersey to really kind of come up with some ideas and address some issues that would be considered best practices to make our schools safer. So how do we effectively address school security? Every school security strategy has to have three things. The first thing is people. The second is policies and procedures, or what we often refer to as process. And the third is technology. So these things all have to be implemented in a way that they complement each other and they work together. It's got to be part of a comprehensive strategy. So who are the people involved? School administrators, certainly, teachers and staff members, security personnel, if you happen to have them in your district, law enforcement agencies, both your local law enforcement agency, county agency, state agencies, other community partners, police, fire, EMS, those people who are going to be responding to your school district, for other emergencies, not necessarily that worst case scenario, but other emergencies that would be considered in that all hazards approach to school safety. A couple of people who sometimes get neglected in this conversation are students and parents and guardians. They also have roles in school safety and security. So we're going to talk a little bit about what some of those roles of all these people that we just talked about are. So we'll start with school administrators, roles and responsibilities. Planning is probably the paramount responsibility of school administrators. And I have here in this slide district-wide. So there's a lot of different things that can happen with a variety of policies. So as you all are very familiar with, you have an abundance of policies that address all kinds of things, not the least of which is school safety. When it comes to school safety, however, the approach needs to be a district-wide approach, where some other policies that focus more on the educational mission or curriculum or things like that, they can kind of vary depending on the age or of the students or the the grade levels of your different buildings. When it comes to a comprehensive strategy for security, your policies, procedures, your process should be district-wide. So that means every building in your district is addressing safety and security in the same manner. So it's important that the policies and procedures you have, particularly those contained in your safety and security plan, are consistent throughout each building in your district. Making sure staff are trained, substitutes are trained in those emergency responses that we'll talk about in a moment. Making sure that drills are conducted according to the New Jersey drill laws, and also with type and frequency of the way those drills have to be conducted. Communication with teachers, communication with other school administrators, communication with parents, and communication with students, as well as communication with those outside agencies that are going to be your partners in school safety. Accountability, certainly accountability for the overall safety, day-to-day operations. But if you have an emergency, particularly accountability at the end of that emergency. We have to make sure that all of our students are accounted for, all of our staff members are accounted for, they're all safe and they're all secure, and we all get them home safely to their parents or their families. That also plays into reunification process. So oftentimes we focus on the response. What's it going to look like in our school district if we have to respond to an emergency? Whether it's an incident of violence or some other thing like a fire, a chemical spill, some other emergency where we have to evacuate the building. Reunification is an important part that schools are now looking at in that recovery mode. So we make sure not only are we trying to prevent incidents from happening, we're capable of responding, but we also are addressing these situations where we can effectively recover from emergencies as well. So reunification process, making sure all of our students get home safely to their parents after a crisis is also very important. School safety specialist, I'm just going to touch on that very briefly. So every public school district in the state of New Jersey has had to have designated a school safety specialist. That's someone in your school district who has either is a school administrator or has some type of expertise in school safety and security. So I'm not sure exactly who your school safety specialist is in your district, but school safety specialists have to attend a four-day training that's given by the Department of Education, Office of School Preparedness and Emergency Planning. It's called the School Safety Specialist Academy. So your school safety specialist, I'm sure, has probably been exposed to that training as well. So there are significant roles that come with that responsibility as well, to kind of oversee a lot of the things that pertain to school safety and security. So teachers and staff members, again, clearly have significant roles in school safety, initiating emergency responses. So depending on the types of systems you have, depending on what type of alarms or how you call these emergency procedures, teachers in the classroom are kind of the boots on the ground. They have to initiate these emergency procedures, make sure the doors are locked in lockdown, the shades are pulled, the students get into those hiding spaces or those deep corners of your classroom. So very, very significant responsibility on teachers and educators in the district. Student supervision, of course, any students that are under their care during that period are their responsibility. They also have to account for those students who might have left the room to go to the bathroom or go to the office or go to a guidance counselor. So taking attendance and accounting for students is also very important. Familiarizing students with these emergency procedures. So depending on how your district handles that communicating that to your students, the students have to know those what their responsibilities are as well. And usually that role falls upon classroom teachers to kind of discuss what those emergency procedures are and to make sure they're effectively implemented in the classroom. Teachers may also assist with after action things like reunification or parent notification in some cases. Security personnel, again, if you have them, these slides pertain to any district, so I'm not sure if you have any security personnel on site, but if you do, they have roles obviously in physically monitoring the facility, identifying camera views and other security technology, monitoring those cameras, conducting any types of investigations that might come up. They should also be involved in planning and training, communication with law enforcement. Sometimes they serve in that capacity as that law enforcement liaison. Other activities, sweep, rescue, reunification as well. And sometimes in some districts, again, I mentioned that school safety specialist position, that designation that every school district has to have. Sometimes if there's not a school administrator who wants to fill that role, the law was changed to allow someone with expertise in school safety to be able to handle that role. So in some cases, those end up being your security personnel. Law enforcement. While law enforcement may not physically be in the building on a regular basis, it's important that school districts have an ongoing collaborative relationship with their local law enforcement agency. So even again, if there's not any situation where the police are in the building on a regular basis, they can certainly do drive-throughs or walk-throughs periodically to become familiar with the school facilities, the school grounds, know what the entrances and exits look like. So they're familiar with how they're going to respond and collaborate again with school district administrators and educators to make sure they can have a good relationship and collaborative response. They can also be involved in emergency planning, certainly should be involved in training and drills that are conducted. So again, the drill law was amended just a year ago that requires that a police officer is present at least one security drill every year in every school district. So if police officers haven't been coming regularly, they don't have to meet everyone, but they have to be at least one every year. So another way that the state has kind of implemented that partnership with between police and educators. Certainly they conduct criminal investigations, so there's something called a memorandum of agreement between law enforcement officials and the Board of Education that has to be signed annually. Again, it's a comprehensive document that details specifically how law enforcement and educators will interact during a number of scenarios, so including but not limited to criminal investigations and other law enforcement matters. They can also come in to do drug and alcohol prevention programs, vaping programs, smoking cessation programs, things that we're dealing with, with a lot of our students, particularly on the middle school level. Vaping has become, an epidemic in many districts. Again, I don't know what the experience is with it here, but those again are kind of prevention programs that law enforcement agencies can partner with their educators to kind of facilitate some of those. I mentioned county partners, fire, EMS, and OEM. Again, these are people who are going to be responding in any number of different emergencies, so we should also have a collaborative relationship with these partners as well for emergency response, planning, training, and drills. So students, what are the students' roles and responsibilities? Students must become familiar with what their responsibilities are as far as what their roles and responsibilities are in a lockdown. Where they need to go in the classroom, knowing that they have to silence their cell phones if they're able to carry them in school, to be quiet and to act appropriately, so that way they're maintaining the safety and integrity of that lockdown situation. Similarly with evacuations, where to go, what routes to follow, to make sure they're following their teacher or the adult who's responsible for their supervision to maintain their safety. Communication of risks, threats, and behavior. We hope that we have relationship-based, paradigms in our school and our school climate, so that our students are comfortable reporting things to us, whether it be to a teacher, whether it be to a support staff member, whether it be to a main office administrator. We want to make sure that our students are comfortable, that we have trusting relationships with them, because our students, as we know far more than the adults in the building typically about what those threats are. They're on Instagram and Snapchat, and they see these things on a 24/7 cycle with their friends. So the likelihood that a student is going to identify a threat that's posted on social media prior to an adult knowing is very likely. So we want to make sure that we have those relationships, and we reinforce that role with students, that they have an obligation for their own safety and the safety of their peers to report those things when they see them. Compliance with rules and regulations, just basically your code of conduct issues on behavior, but also things like not letting other people in through other entrances that they're not supposed to let people in. So if they happen to be walking down the hall and there's somebody waiting at a side door, we want our kids to be polite, but we don't want them to be too polite where they let people in through a side door because someone's standing out in the cold or out in the rain. So we want to reinforce the procedures that all the exterior doors have to be locked and everybody has to come in and be vetted in through the main entrance, and that's for the safety of everybody involved. So compliance, student compliance with rules and regulations is very important as well. And again, communicating those security concerns to school staff, police, and of course their parents. Parents also have roles and responsibilities. Familiarization with procedures. So I have to qualify familiarization with procedures in a certain way, because while we want our parents to kind of generally know that our schools are safe, that we have comprehensive safety and security plans in place, and that our students know, the difficulty for school administrators is that safety and security plans are not public records, and they're not public records for good reason. I like to compare it to giving the other team your playbook, right? So if we overtly advertise how our responses are going to be and what we're going to do in an emergency or in an active shooter situation or in any other type of emergency, if we just put them out broadly, then not only do the parents know, other community members know, but people who might want to use those for nefarious purpose, they also have that. So while we can generally give information about the fact that we have a school safety and security plan in place, that we practice drills regularly, one security drill every month, one fire drill every month, as mandated by law, if don't be surprised if you as a parent call up the main office and say, hey, can I have a copy of the safety and security plan or your emergency procedures? They're not going to be able to give them to you, nor should they, because that's why they're specifically exempted from the Open Public Records Act. So even if you made an open request, you wouldn't be entitled to get those documents because they're specifically protected for that exact reason. So it's important that parents are familiar with the procedures. The procedures I'm talking about are more along the lines of how to properly check into the main office if you have to visit for any reason. And that may mean not only getting buzzed in and stating your name and the reason that you're there and who you're there to see and what your child's name is and a lot of other, you know, potentially vetting questions that may take a little bit longer than they did back in the days when schools were open environments, right? So we have to be, as parents, and I'm a parent of four children myself, so I understand that, you know, we want to have access to our children, but I also understand the fact that it's the school's responsibility to safeguard our kids during the time that they're here under their care. So as much as it may be a little bit inconvenient to wait outside a little bit longer, maybe answer a couple more questions, or maybe have to show your driver's license to get it swiped in a visitor management system, these are all things that are consistent with best practices. And it's not that our school administrators or principals or main office staff doesn't trust our parents, it's just a matter of we have to have a process in place or should have a process in place that vets everybody who comes in through those doors. So being familiar with those procedures when they're in place, making sure if the procedure is that you have to show photo identification, that you bring your photo identification in with you. And if you forget it and you have to take a walk back to your car, it's again, we have to remember it's for the safety of our kids and not solely to inconvenience parents or visitors. Communication of risk, threats, and behavior. So again, much like we hope that our students will tell us when there's a threat or something that's of a security concern to us. We hope that even if those children are not comfortable maybe talking to a teacher or administrator about it, they may go home and tell mom and dad about it. And we hope that mom and dad will then in turn be the ones to notify the school staff, notify the police department. So that way we can, again, vet those threats out or security concerns out to see if there's any credibility to them. So again, we can safeguard our school community to a significant degree. And again, open communication between school staff, police, and students. So the second facet of any comprehensive security strategy is policies and procedures, or again, what we like to call process. So schools have to have a comprehensive plan to address a multitude of crisis situations or hazards. We consider this an all hazards approach to school safety and emergency management. So there's, for all New Jersey public schools, there's minimum standards, there's 91 specific elements that are promulgated by the New Jersey Department of Education that address a variety, as you can imagine, of threats, vulnerabilities that school districts deal with. So it's not just about active shooter situations. It's about drugs, it's about other types of violence, it's about bullying, it's about gang activity, it's about chemical spills, significant weather incidents. So these all hazard plans are very comprehensive and they address a multitude of hazards and threats. And these things are mandated, these plans are mandated by the Department of Education. So they have to be in place in order to address the specific elements that the Department of Education requires. Among those are things like access control and visitor management. Those are among those elements that have to be addressed with in these policies and procedures. So the policies and procedures really are designed to address the cycle of emergency management. Preparedness and mitigation, prevention, mitigation, preparedness, response, and recovery. So that's basically equates to the before, during, and after an emergency. So we want to have safeguards in place and procedures in place to address all of those parts of a crisis. So some of the things we might deal with in prevention and mitigation are threats, bullying, cyberbullying, school violence, substance abuse, any number of other things where we can actively go out and try and prevent these things from happening or our students engaging in these types of behaviors. Preparedness, those are the planning activities, the making sure our staff is properly trained and executing those drills and exercises in accordance with the laws. Preparedness, another part of preparedness is what we consider target hardening. Supervision and security checks around the building. Again, whether you have security personnel or not, teachers, support staff that may have hall monitor positions or lunch duty positions or be outside for bus duty and arrival and dismissal times, target hardening initiatives really have they speak to the fact that if you have somebody watching, right, people commit crimes when they think no one's watching. So the more supervision you have in areas that potentially you're vulnerable, the less likely you are to be a victim of a crime. So the same holds true for school safety. Limiting entrances. So among the best practices in safety and security that's emerged is limiting entrances, the number of entrances that staff members and students and certainly visitors utilize during the school day. So a lot of our school buildings were built many years ago, or even even that ones that were built more recently were designed in a way that there's multiple entrances and exits. The unfortunate part about that is the more we use different entrances and exits, the more difficult it becomes to secure those entrances and exits. The more likelihood there is that a door is going to be left open, that it's not going to latch properly, that it could be propped open because it's more convenient to get out to a parking lot or to a field or some other area. So another emerging best practice is to make sure all of the exterior doors clearly are locked and secured during the school day when the school's in session, but limiting the entrances. So have all staff members come in through a single entrance or entrances in a few entrances that are closest to where they need to access their rooms and their offices. Certainly students should be brought in through one entrance so we can have monitoring, visual screening when they come through. And certainly, again, that all visitors who come in are come in through one main office, and they're not allowed in the building until there's some type of vetting process or number of questions that are asked to make sure they have legitimate business to come into the school. So some other emerging best practices that, again, the vast majority of schools, I don't know any school in the state of New Jersey that doesn't have some type of access control system in place, like the one you have out here where there's a video intercom where you have to press a button and be acknowledged. State your name and who you are, who you're here to see, and again, they range from everywhere from a video intercom to other much more comprehensive technological advances for access control and visitor management. So, speaking of visitor management, the concept of visitor management is as simple as this: the fewer people you have entering your building, the safer your kids are going to be. Okay, and I know that doesn't always translate well to parents who want to have open access, who want to visit their children for a variety of different reasons. But the overarching rule is the fewer people you have who enter the building, the more you minimize the risk that somebody who doesn't belong here or somebody who has an ill intent is going to enter the building. So there's schools all over the state, all over the country, who are limiting access to parents, to visitors, for any number of reasons. I know there was some discussion about parties and parades and other classroom activities. So years ago, it was unfettered access to schools, right? Parents could come in for birthday parties, they could deliver things to their children if they forgot their lunch or if they forgot a book or forgot something else. They could just walk into school, check into a main office and walk right through and hand deliver things to their kids. Unfortunately, we live in a society these days where that's really not a practical or safe way to operate a school district. You all walked in, and more evidence of this here, you all walked in through a main entrance. There was something called the courtesy card out in the main entrance. So for the same reasons that you would limit access for things like parties and parades and other events that don't really, that aren't mandated or part of a curricular function, that courtesy card has the same purpose. Okay, so if a child forgets their lunch or forgets their sneakers for gym or forgets something else, there's no reason for them to enter beyond that set of double doors. Okay, so the purpose of courtesy card, and again, Clinton Township is one of many school districts in the state of New Jersey who has a similar setup where they have a vestibule that's where the drop-off point is. So you can get buzzed in because my son or daughter forgot their lunch. And that's as far as you go, is to dropping it in that bin, putting a note on it, and then someone will retrieve it and make sure that your child gets the item that they lost. Again, the whole concept of that is to minimize the number of people who have to enter the building. So it's not to restrict, again, not so you can't have that face-to-face contact with your child, or not so you can't hand-deliver their lunch. It's basically a game of numbers. The fewer people who get in, the safer our children are going to be. So those are things that are emerging best practices, not only in the state of New Jersey, but throughout the country as well. Other things like staff members wearing visible IDs, so everybody kind of knows that everybody else belongs in the building. So if you see somebody who's not wearing an ID, you can challenge them and question them and find out why, you know, who they are or why who they're here to visit, and make sure they get vetted through the main office through whatever the visitor management system indicates. There's many schools who are requiring all of their students now to wear identification as well. So again, these are things that are ongoing. Every school kind of does it a little bit differently based on the resources that they have, and trying to balance the needs of the school with those safety concerns. But there's, again, these are a lot of things that we consider target hardening to make our schools safer. So again, back to the visitor management thing for a second. So who is the threat? So when I talk to schools about the fact that, well, why can't parents come to these things? Or why do I have to drop my son or daughter's lunch off in the lobby? And I can't get into the school. The question I often get is, who is the threat? Are you afraid that your parents are going to come in and do something to their own children? And that's certainly not the case. The fact of the matter is we don't always know who the threat is. So a couple of the images that you have here on this slide are just some recent cases where people got into school buildings and with ill intent, and they certainly weren't parents of children who were in the building, but they were able to get inside the building and have contact with children who were not theirs. But for lax visitor management and access control procedures, they were allowed to do that. So one was a mother was looking for answers because an individual got into a building through a side door that had been left open, and he had unfettered access to the school and then confronted and had an interaction with her son. So clearly there was some issue with access control there, with doors not being locked or propped open. Just recently in Washington, D.C., this was only a couple weeks ago, a sex offender tailgated. By tailgating, I mean followed in a parent who was there in the building, going into the building to pick up her children, followed her into the building because the door was propped open. Again, we all want to be polite, and we don't necessarily know who the person is walking in behind us, but we don't want to be rude, so sometimes I just got vetted and I went through my process to identify myself and who I was there to see and what my purpose was. But if I hold the door for the person behind me, they haven't gone through that same process. And in this case, this person came in and tried to abduct two students from a Washington, D.C. school. They were stopped by a school security officer who recognized them as not being the parents of the children. So again, the fact of the matter is we don't know who the threat is. And it's not to say that our parents are going to be the threat, but we also don't know what's going on in that household or in that family that could ultimately end up being a threat to our school. There's a lot of child custody issues, there's domestic violence issues, which brings me to the image on the upper right, which was about 2 years ago in San Bernardino, California, where the estranged husband of a teacher came to the main office of a school. The main office staff knew him to be in a relationship with that teacher. He said he needed to speak to her about something. He came into the main office. He signed in through the visitor management procedure. He was allowed to go to her classroom, where he shot and killed her and killed a young student in a crossfire at that time. So again, to answer the question, we don't know who the threat is. We don't know what's going on in other people's lives and other people's families. So again, the best practice is to minimize visitors to the degree possible. The fewer visitors we have, the more we can supervise them and know they're here for legitimate reasons, and the better we can safeguard our students. So on to the response. Our responses: lockdown, shelter in place, and evacuation, the three go-to responses. Your children, I'm sure, all know how to do those because they do them on a regular basis. Again, one security drill a month. Recovery, we talked about reunification. We also have to make sure that if we do have an emergency of any kind, we provide counseling to our staff members and our students. We have those reunification procedures in place, and continuity of operations. If we had to facilitate educating our kids because we couldn't come to this building for 2 weeks, 3 weeks or more due to some other type of emergency, we'd have to have those recovery plans in place as well. So the last component is technology. So there's a lot of technology that can greatly enhance school safety and security. Security cameras, we talked about access control system, visitor management systems. A lot of schools are moving towards anonymous reporting applications where students can report security concerns. Primarily, these are usually used for things like bullying or cyberbullying. But they're making that net a little broader these days. Panic alarms, Alyssa's Law was recently enacted that requires every school to have a panic alarm that goes directly to their law enforcement agency. Emergency notification system, screening devices. Some schools who have more significant resources are even going to things like biometrics, where you're entering the building using a fingerprint or an eye scan or facial recognition or some other type of thing. So there's a variety of different levels of technology that can assist in your school safety and security strategies. Addressing unique challenges, we also have in many schools special needs populations that have unique needs. We have to make sure that those students with disabilities, their needs are also considered in emergency planning. And there's no one size fits all. So the specifics for those students might have to be addressed in an IEP process or a 504 process. So we want to make sure that all of their specific needs are addressed as well. So the bottom line is there's no single person or measure that can guarantee security. Comprehensive strategy has to include all three components: people, processes, and technology. Security, unfortunately, is not convenient. So the things that are put in place to safeguard our school communities may require a little bit more effort on the part of our parents and our staff members, but it's worthwhile if we're able to keep those threats out and to keep our children safe. So this is a quote from William Webster, former FBI and CIA director. For someone like me in the security industry, this rings true more than anything. Security is always seen as too much until the day it's not enough. So as much as these things sometimes are inconvenient and we think nothing's ever going to happen, we see a lot of the incidents that we see that impact school safety happen in communities just like this. They're not typically happening in inner city urban areas, they're happening in suburban and rural communities just like this. So we have to do our due diligence and know our roles and be supportive of the efforts to safeguard our schools and our students. Any board members have any questions?
I do have a question.
Sure.
So thank you for this. I could have gotten this presentation a couple of months ago. It was great. So thanks for coming out. I grew up less than 10 miles from August High School, so this presentation does come close to home. I will never forget the morning after Columbine, driving to middle school with my mom and opening up the beginning and asking her what happened, why it happened. And so in conjunction with Saugus, they communicated that now it's been more than 233,000 school children have been exposed to targeted school violence. So I'm very interested in everything that we can do in this community to keep our children safe. That said, I'm also a parent, and so I would like to dig in a little bit more into how we can craft policies for our district that both limit visitors and keep our children safe, but also empower parents to be the best eyes and ears we can be to hear about threats and report threats and be engaged community members so that the staff member recognizes, hey, that's not that person's parent who's taking them out of the school. So I'm curious what sort of recommendations that you have that balance those two things and sort of best practices for policies that both engage parents but also protect children.
Well, as much as we would love to know, be able to know every parent by face and recognize them, I don't think that's necessarily a reasonable expectation that anybody who comes in the building, we're going to immediately recognize them. Again, in some smaller districts, you might be able to do that, but in larger districts, it's an impossibility. So we have to get to know our parents, and our parents have to get to know us through communication that may take place outside of the school. Parents coming into the school is not going to give them necessarily any more familiarity with those safety and security procedures than it would be if we tell them that they have to buzz in through the main door. So there's a lot of things that go on in the community at large where parents communicate about things that are going on in the community. They can get that information from their having conversations with their own kids when they come home about things that are going on in the school or what the students' concerns are about their safety. And then you can address those things with conversations with school administrators. But I don't know that there's that opening up and having significant numbers of people coming and going in your building is going to ever make your school any safer.
You did, though, mention something about having community events outside of the school, and maybe that as an avenue for having the school district sort of maintain that level of relationship with the parent stakeholder group. Are there examples that you have of other districts who have maybe participated in, is it having a bigger presence at the community day in April? Is it, what are some ways that districts are sort of compensating? Because you don't want to just cut that off.
No, I don't, again, I think it's got to be a kind of an ongoing communication. You can do public presentations. You can have invite parents to come in the evening for a security presentation or to discuss what their security concerns are or what concerns are going on in the community. The unfortunate part is sometimes when you offer those types of public presentations, you don't always get the number of people who you would hope to get to discuss those things. So you can always offer that communication, but it's incumbent on parents to want to come and participate in those events as well. Sure.
And that's about identification. So you talked about swiping in with a driver's license. Some parents, I know a friend of mine, they moved out from New York City, her husband doesn't have a driver's license. What are some other types of identification that districts are using for parents to come in who might not have a driver's license?
So you can get it. If you don't have to have a physical driver's license. That with a driver's endorsement on it, people can get identification through the county clerk's office. You can get a non-driver identification card through DMV. And there still may be people who don't have identification who have to come in to pick up their children. And we can't restrict somebody necessarily from entering the building if they have a child here to come and pick up their child just because they don't have that photo identification. Those things have to be handled on a case-by-case basis. There's going to be information contained, identifying information contained in your student information system. That it just may take a little bit longer to conduct that vetting process, asking them for their child's date of birth or some other information that would only be contained in the student information system that they would only know if they had that connection with their parents. So there's different ways that you can investigate and different ways you can vet out people who don't have identification, but I think the people who don't have photo identification are going to be the exception rather than the rule. So it's not to say it can't happen, but you just go through a little bit more of a vetting process, asking some more questions, tying it to some information that's in your student information system, and using that as the vetting process to allow entry. And even at that point, you may want to have somebody escort them in to the main office to do their business, whatever business they have here, and then escort them out. Any other questions?
Thank you for your presentation. Do you have data on what the greatest threats are to children generally and then to children within schools? I think there's a perception that shootings are the greatest threat. Do you have data that bear out whether it's actually more domestic violence or if they're...
And
how you create a security system that addresses the greatest threat.
I don't have data specifically on what the greatest threat is. I can tell you that active shooter incidents are exceedingly rare.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here to tell anybody that that there's a likelihood that there's going to be an active shooter in this or any school. In fact, when you factor in the number of the the tens of millions of students that attend schools in the United States every day. Compared to those who have been victims of school shooting, it's exceedingly rare. However, it's still something that we have to prepare for. So we still can't take that approach that, well, it can't happen here, because it really can happen anywhere. So it's a matter of preparing for things that are possible as well as probable. So there's certainly threats that are much more significant and much more likely to have happen. Somebody coming in, to abduct or there being a domestic violence incident, or a non-custodial parent coming in to try and take their child. Those things are much more likely to occur, certainly, than an active shooter incident. But I would defer to plan for all hazards versus plan for one that's more likely than another.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If anybody has any other questions afterwards, you can certainly address them to your board president, and I'd be happy to follow up. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to move on, please, to the report of the superintendent of schools. Dr. Kern, do you have your report?
Yes, thank you. Our enrollment report tonight is 1,221, it's holding steady. Our suspensions are no suspensions to report this month.
Yay.
And also for the HIB readings this evening, there are no first readings. Second readings, there are four. So it's especially appropriate to express a bit of gratitude during the month of November. Thank you to the Township of Clinton for your donation of 200 pumpkins. That's our first thank you. Students at both Round Valley and Patrick McGarren enjoyed those pumpkins in their enrichment class. I'd also like to say thank you to the Annandale Hose Company for their visit to Patrick McGarren on October 25th. The visit was a follow-up to Fire Safety Awareness Week and featured presentations with Sparky the Dog for students in grades 1 and 2. Students in all three grades, K through 2, visited the fire trucks. So the fire trucks also visited those children at Spruce Run, and all students enjoyed everything, so thank you. The week of November 11th through 15th was designated as School Psychologist Awareness Week. We'd like to thank and recognize our school psychologists across the district as valuable team members who help us find our focus when working with students of all abilities. We thank you for the insights you bring to our collective work, so thank you. Also, a shout out to Dottie Daniello. We'd like to congratulate her for being named a member of the New Jersey Student Learning Assessment Team for the Middle School Sciences Advisory Committee. Dottie will be part of a panel that includes educators across the state of New Jersey, along with the Department of Education, the Measurement Inc. Company, and these important development activities will take place over the next year as the committee reviews the preliminary items for the 2021 spring administration of this test. This is quite an honor and continues the work that Dottie began with the release of the new science assessments last year. So thank you for her work and congratulations. I would also like to introduce an item on our personnel section of the agenda tonight for the approval of Ms. Kelly Morris as our new business administrator. Ms. Morris brings with her experience in school business administration from Del Valle, Alexandria Township, and Hampton Borough District. Her experience in the BA office, along with her 14 years of experience as a teacher, give Ms. Morris a unique perspective that will be beneficial to the district. Another item on our agenda this evening I'd like to mention is we'll have a motion for a scheduling expert, Elliot Marenbloom, who will work along with the administrative team to look at increasing instructional time, programming efficiencies, time for staff collaboration, social-emotional learning, and the best way to meet the needs of our students. Mr. Marenbloom is a renowned expert in the field and has helped a number of New Jersey districts advance their educational programs. So we're pleased to consult with him as he works with the administration and then teachers to talk about scheduling and what we need to do moving forward. That is my report.
Thank you, Dr. Cohn. Looking for a motion, please, for action item 20-SU-010 to 20-SU-012.
Motion.
Motion, Ms. Grantham.
Second.
Second, Ms. Brennan. Any questions this evening? Seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Ms. Brennan?
Yes.
Ms. Brooks?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Dr. Grantham?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Ms. Olofsky?
Yes.
Dr. Riyamaki?
Yes.
And Ms. Graham?
Yes, motion carries. I'd like to open the floor to our first public comment section on agenda items only. To guarantee the fair and orderly expression of an individual, our bylaw limits comments to 3 minutes. We will adhere to this bylaw to allow for everyone to be heard in a fair, consistent, and equitable way. Also, the public comment section is for comments made by the public. It is not an interactive session between the board and the public. This, too, is defined by our bylaw. The board will make note of any questions or comments that a member of the public will have at the microphone. If the Board of Education has an immediate answer to the question or questions, they will be answered at the conclusion of the public comment section. To the extent any other action or research is warranted, it will be addressed by the board president or superintendent of schools as appropriate. No participant may speak more than once on the same topic until all others who wish to speak on that topic have been heard. If you'd like to address the board this evening on agenda items only, please approach a microphone, state your name and address. Be limiting this public comment section to 30 minutes.
I stand before you on behalf of the 180 teachers, secretaries, teaching assistants, and custodians in our district schools, who as of today have worked for the last 870 days with an expired contract. For the last 2 months, the CTA members and the community members have been vocal about the challenges we are facing here in Clinton Township. We've said that we intend to address these challenges, and we believe that in the wake of the elections earlier this month, we are now taking steps in a forward direction to overcome these challenges. This is the beginning of a new normal in our school district, and it's going to take every one of us, CTA members, administrators, parents, and Board of Education members, to work together to make it a reality. The time is now. I dare say we do have our work cut out for us, but that work begins tonight. It begins right now. First, it begins by ensuring that all stakeholders can view the Board of Education meetings. The time is now to make this happen. While you provide audio for the community to reference, we believe that actions always speak louder than words. So we will be exercising the legal right under the 2007 State Supreme Court ruling in Torres versus Borough of Pine Hill to videotape and broadcast these meetings to ensure that all show each other respect when we talk about the issues that concern us. In addition, under the umbrella of establishing a new normal here in Clinton Township, we're addressing those issues that are in direct violation of the law, state statute, and our collective bargaining agreement. To that end, the CTA has taken the following legal action. First, we have worked with our attorneys to file a litigation hold order, which instructs the district to preserve and provide all emails, phone calls, text messages, and other correspondence relating to extending contracts with ESS and Delta T to place teaching assistants in our schools. It is our belief that the district acted inappropriately and has illegally issued these contracts to these companies. Secondly, we are investigating possible ethics violations for actions conducted over the past several years and during this election. It's our belief that there have been ongoing and direct violations of the state's ethics acts that each board member is required to uphold. Finally, and most notably, I've stood before this board and publicly declared that the CTA immediately would act should any CTA member be harmed by any action or violation of our contract. To that end, and regrettably, we continue to have to file grievances to uphold and protect the rights of our members. As I've said before and repeatedly said again, CTA members care more about than just getting a good deal at the bargaining table. We care about this district. We care about this community and our students, and we will not rest until we achieve a new normal that we all deserve. The time is now. Thank you.
I'm Sonia Dominakis, 56 Hicktown Road. Taxpayer, community member, parent, and staff member. Putting on my parent slash community member hat for tonight. This is something I wrote down from a few months ago, but in the spirit of transparency, a suggestion is to allow people to subscribe to updates to the Board of Ed section of the website in regards to posted and updated agendas, public notices about changing of times for public meetings, as well as when the audios have been posted and any other important such information. I think being able to subscribe to these updates really will facilitate that communication piece between community members and school district. The second thing I wanted to bring up was a question that has been brought up a lot in my household lately, and that was in regards to 20-FF-38, which was from the September 30th meeting. In that agenda, it wasn't described to such detail as Dr. Cohn described it tonight, but we had allotted for $7,500 plus travel to a Marin Bloom consultant or something like that. And I see tonight that there's another motion for something else where it's an estimated cost of nearly $4,000 plus travel costs. And so the question, originally, what was the reason for this necessary master schedule overhaul, reworking, whatever you want to call it, but I think Dr. Coney kind of expressed some of those points. But my question, I guess my next question is the $3,900 in addition to the $7,500 we already paid, or is that a lowering of the cost from 75 to 39? It's unclear what this new motion is representative of. If it's in total, that means we spent over $10,000 on this person to do a schedule change. And just curious about that.
Sentence, the superintendent shall communicate such limitations and or restrictions to the school community annually or as appropriate in the case of any changes occurring during the school year. I guess it will be a request, recommendation for this coming school year to please consider the timeliness of this communication, maybe towards the end of the prior school year or no later than August. Especially when, personally speaking, PTA-related activities like classroom celebrations, so that we as PTA, who classroom parties, the PTA organize it, they sponsor it, they execute it, And I just think it will be professionally polite to have better communication timely so we can prepare parents better of what to expect and not be caught off guard after we already had our meetings and then we have a lot of explaining to do when parents still don't understand maybe the reasoning. Even though I can understand it's for security, I totally understand that and accept that, but just the timeliness of communication. So if there's something coming up in the next year, just please consider that. That would be greatly appreciated. And then the other thing I wanted to just bring up is the feasibility of the school closing. I almost feel I want to make a recommendation to change that whole name to repurposing of Spruce Run School, because we still have parents to this day saying, I thought Spruce Run School was closed, when indeed it's not. Preschoolers is at a disadvantage when people think they, I don't know, where are they? But they actually are at Spruce Run. And then just from the report that was done, sorry, I was done, it was the potential district reorganization report. Item number 5, it says, the conclusion dollar amount that would be attributed to reorganization would be finalized 1 year after the plan is implemented, how much savings. It was estimated to have about $900,000 of savings. The first year and subsequent years, it anticipates that the savings would be over $1 million, I'm sorry. I'm just curious to know, what is the conclusive dollar amount of savings that actually did occur, considering it's now more than 1 year after that date? There's a few other points, but I think I'm probably out of time. Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to close the floor. I'd like to close the floor on public comment section on agenda items only and open the floor on the first recognition of the public. Same parameters that I mentioned before pertaining to public comment section on agenda items only apply here as well. If you'd like to speak with the board on school-related matters only, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this particular section to 10 minutes. Okay, seeing none, we'll go to the first report of our committee, Facilities and Finance. Commissioner Malloy, report of your committee, please.
Facilities and Finance Committee discussed several topics this past Thursday evening. And you'll see items that Mr. Hawkins and Dr.
Order
Cohn.
With the BA report.
Oh, yeah,
I'll go
BA.
Back to that. I'll go back to that.
Presented the committee on the agenda this evening. First and foremost, as we do every month, the board will vote on payment of our bills for the period ending November 18, 2019 of $2.447 million and some change. Our committee is also looking to approve 12 PD opportunities for our staff, including board staff approval for staff requests for graduate coursework. Specifically this month, we have 7 staff members requesting grad coursework to be paid for by the district. The board would once again like to thank the township for donating 200 pumpkins to Spruce Run, Patrick McGarren, and Round Valley, and we'll be voting on accepting this donation with appreciation this evening. Action item FF076, the committee is looking for approval for a memorandum agreement with Elliot Marin Bloom to restructure the master schedules for grades K-8, as we discussed. Dr. Cohn has already discussed this item, but more than welcome to discuss further if she likes. We're looking to expand our reach for substitute and temporary nursing services by approving a contract with EDU Healthcare for substitute temp and nursing services when a direct hire is not immediately available. There is a shortage of school nurses and substitute school nurses, so the district is working towards assuring we have access to nurses on a substitute basis when needed. Action 20FF078, we are looking for approval that would permit our architect, Brett Somjan, to input the district's new long-range planning facility into the NJDOE database. This input of this data in the state system is a legal requirement. Brett Somjan is familiar with the state's database, and therefore, we are guaranteed a timely and accurate input of our long-range facility plan into the system. We also have 8 action items that provide money from the state through the Clinton Township District to Immaculate Conception for non-security public initiatives. For those who attend, we speak about that pretty much every month. That is money that has to come through the state, but must come through us before it can move to a private school. FF20087. We look to approve and update and replace the authorized signatories on the Spruce Run Student Activity Account at Investors Bank to Dr. Michelle Cohn, Robin Bennett, and Alexa Ingram. The committee looks for approval tonight for First Aid CPR LLC to provide training to district staff at a cost of $40 per person, with a total cost not to exceed $600. This training will be done on December 4th at Spruce Run. With that, I seek a motion on action items 20FF070 through 20FF090.
Thank you, Mr. Moy. Looking for a second, please.
Second.
Second, Ms. Olowski. Any questions this evening?
I have questions. I'm new, so I'm trying to figure it out. On FF088 and the buses, is that like additional buses that we've been doing already, or is that new buses?
No, that's a bill from buses we started this past fall.
Oh, so the ones from, okay, that's what I was just curious.
I have a question. Do we have an answer for Mrs. Dominakis's question about whether this is 076 is replacing the old action, or is this in addition?
I'm not certain. I'm going to have find out the particular on that.
Okay, so it is best practices then to table this one for the future?
No, we can always go back and remove it later on, but it probably needs to move forward so that he can get in here, correct? Mm-hmm.
But we've already approved spending on it, so do we need to approve this, is my question.
I think for now, if we go ahead and approve it, if we need to come back and amend it next month, we can do that. We don't want to stop the movement forward for next year to make sure the analysis goes forward.
We've approved the analysis, though. So are we approving beyond the $7,500 that we've already approved?
So Dr. Cohn already said she's not sure. She'll get back to you. But instead of potentially holding it up and waiting till the December meeting, approve this. If it needs to be changed for next month, then it'll be changed.
You can always amend it next month.
Amend it next month.
Okay. Do you believe there has been a change in the cost?
Again, we're not sure, and we'll get back to you on that, okay? Any other questions? Seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Sure. Ms. Brennan?
Yes.
Ms. Brooks?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Dr. Grantham?
Yes, except I would like to abstain from 20-FF-076.
Okay. Mr. Hornick?
Yes, but I also would like to abstain from 20FF-076.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Ms. Olowski?
Yes.
Dr. Riamaki?
Yes, and I will also abstain from 076.
Okay, Ms. Graham?
Yes. Motion passes. We'll go back to the report of the Business Administrator, Board Secretary, Mr. Polkowski.
Sure. We're just approving two motions. One is to approve our Board Secretary and Treasurer report for the month of October, as well as any line item transfers for the month of October.
Okay, thank you. Second.
Motion.
Looking for a motion, please, for action item 20-BA-009 to 20-BA-110.
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Questions? Seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Ms. Brennan?
Yes.
Ms. Brooks?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Dr. Grantham?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Ms. Olowski?
Yes.
Dr. Riamaki?
Yes.
And Ms. Graham?
Yes. Motion passes.
I have a question about that. Does Mr. Hornick have to abstain since it happened, the 009 and 010, just because it happened before he got sworn in?
I don't think
he doesn't have to.
Okay.
Just ask.
He doesn't have to.
You could choose to abstain.
It doesn't matter.
Like right. No. I've been reading.
Okay.
Everything.
Sure.
Okay.
We'll move on to the Personnel Committee. Personnel Committee reviewed the following recommendations from our Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Michelle Cohn. First, we're looking for approval to hire a bus aide for a student during the 2019-2020 school year at a cost of $15 per hour, not to exceed 12 hours a week. It is with great regret that we're looking for the approval to accept the resignation of Ms. Patricia Gorda, teaching assistant, effective June 30th, Ms. Gorda, I don't know if you're out there tonight, but we'd like to wish you all the best in your retirement and thank you for your years of service to the children of Clinton Township. Action item 20-P126 is seeking approval of two assistant coaches for boys basketball, one for boys basketball and one for girls basketball as well. As Dr. Cohn mentioned during her superintendent comments, the board's looking to approve the hiring of Kelly Morris as school business administrator slash board secretary effective January 1 of 2020. We're also looking for approval for Ms. Jaw to prepare for the responsive classroom training at $50.27 an hour, not to exceed 15 hours. The committee is also looking for approval for hiring a teaching assistant at 0.6 FTE at a salary of $14,058 from November 19th, 2019 through June 30th, 2020. With that, I'm seeking a motion for action items 20-P-124 through 20-P-132.
I'll motion.
Motion, Mr. Malloy, second.
Second.
Second, Mrs. Brooks. Any questions?
Question. 20P126 for the boys and girls assistant basketball coaches. 0 years experience. Does that mean in district or overall?
It just means as basketball coaches.
Do we have any applicants with experience?
No. Any other questions?
Question. Just to make sure, just trying to learn procedure. On the chaperones on 128, and then there's only one listed, is that okay? It's just plural, that's all. I'm just used to wordsmithing at the committees at the college.
What's your question, sorry?
It's listed as chaperones.
It's plural, and there's only one name.
It's an editorial.
Is that okay?
It's only one.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
I have a question about the other folks finished. Approval of the staff to work beyond their contracted hours to cover a shortage of substitutes, not to exceed 20 hours, which seems awfully specific to me. I was just curious, since we have been seeing this shortage, how we arrived at 20 hours is the right number, and whether or not we're backing ourselves into a corner there or not.
This is specific. For a staff member to be over, it would have to be over a 6 month period of time, but this is specific. I believe it's probably it could be for meetings. I'm not really sure.
Okay.
There is for shortages, but 20 hours is what they needed, so.
Okay.
That's what we've got.
So that comes up from the principal to you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Seeing none, maybe have a roll call, please.
Okay, Ms. Brennan?
Yes.
Ms. Brooks?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Dr. Grantham?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes, but I feel I have to abstain from P127 because I didn't get to review any of that stuff.
Sure.
And also P132.
P127 and 132. Okay, thank you. Mr. Malloy?
Yep.
Ms. Olofsky?
Yes.
Dr. Iamaki?
Yes.
And Ms. Graham?
Yes. Motion carries. Moving on to moving on to the report of our policy committee. Ms. Brooks, you're the chair of that committee. May we have the report of your committee, please?
Yes, the policy committee met once last week, and the policy under review, there was only one policy regulation this month, and that was the one discussed at last board meeting. The visitors policy and regulation, there were a number of changes made to the text. Under section A, registration, item 7, the sentences now read, a teacher shall not admit a visitor to his or her classroom unless the visitor has the identifying tag or badge. Visitors without an identifying tag or badge must be accompanied by the principal or the principal's designee. Under section C, also line 7, The text has been changed to read, "The number of visitors to any classroom, including to classroom parties or similar gatherings, may be limited and or restricted as appropriate by the superintendent, principal, or teacher in the interest of maintaining student and building safety, as well as an orderly educational program. The superintendent shall communicate such limitations and or restrictions to the school community annually or as appropriate in the case of any changes occurring during the school year." I'd like to also note that I did write down the feedback that we received about considering the timeliness of this communication for future consideration. Under section D, disruptive visitors, in bullet item one, the principal or superintendent has complete authority to exclude from school premises any person whom he or she believes may, no further changes to the bullets under that. Item four, if the principal or superintendent, and no further changes to that one. That is the end of the changes that were made. With that, I would like to put forth a motion to approve action item 20P0-008.
Thank you. Looking for a second, please.
A second.
Second, Mr. Malloy. Questions?
I have a question. So I would like to express gratitude for the changes in consistency to the policy around adding the superintendent to section D. I believe that's a great change. I still have some concerns around section C7, especially after the presentation this evening, where it was a clear recommendation for a single point of accountability for this. So I have sort of come around to the idea that we need to have one clear policy communicated at one clear time. Thank you for that feedback. Thank you. And so I, in the vein of the changes we made last time where we made it consistently superintendent throughout, I am wondering whether it should just be one point of accountability and whether we should revisit that.
We had a lengthy discussion about this particular point, and the issue here is, please correct me if I get this incorrect, the superintendent will definitely set a policy that would set a maximum number. But the principal would then have the authority to say, nope, that's too many for this particular date or for this particular classroom, and to change it and make it within that policy, make it smaller. And the teacher could even make it smaller yet and would therefore have the authority to ask someone to leave the room if they were being disruptive or difficult. So it's not that there is any diffusion of authority. It's simply giving the teacher's power, the power to control their own classroom, backed up by the principal and backed up further yet by the superintendent. Does that make it more clear?
It does, and I like how you spelled it out there. I'm wondering whether, though, we should have if it's possible to have a third reading of this, because I think that if we explicitly built it in there, that the superintendent sets the maximum for the district and that it cascades like that, I think that that would clarify the policy further and could benefit it.
It seems like it needs to be a separate line, a separate number.
We could try, if you want to try working on the wording, perhaps, during.
You can do it now.
You can work on the wording now, or we could come back to it after executive session, perhaps.
Yeah.
Table it for now, come back to it after we've had a chance to talk about the wording.
Whatever your pleasure.
Is that all right? Can we do that?
Sure.
Yeah, I agree with you. We should
That's
do
good
that.
Idea.
We can definitely spell that out. If you're comfortable with that interpretation of it, then we'll hack at the wording until we get it right.
Okay.
And I just wanted to also clarify, it's really changing words. We're not actually changing
no.
the way we are
we're not,
collaborating
really,
and working.
This is not changing anything about the way things are or should be working right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is bringing the text of our particular document into alignment with current New Jersey state regulations and making sure that it's absolutely clear, because we know that this is a sensitive problem and that people are, some parents are going to object. And we want the teachers backed up, we want the principals backed up, and we want the superintendent to have that, that kind of say. So it's not about any one person being in charge of this, it's making sure that these guys can do whatever they need to do to keep the kids safe in their classrooms and in the buildings. So, that's the full goal here. So we'll table this for now, if that's all right, and we'll come back to it with a different wording.
Okay, I think that's awesome.
Okay. My respectful suggestion is you don't need to vote at the table. The people who moved and seconded it would just withdraw the motion
I'm sure I can fix the wording as we sit here. And before we go into executive session, I'll read to you what I've written. And if it meets with the board's pleasure, you can vote to approve it then.
Okay, I withdraw my motion.
And who's second?
Who's second?
Will you withdraw?
Sure.
Let me work on it, and then I'll raise my hand like you do in school when I'm done, and folks can come back to it.
Okay, so Mrs. Brooks, can we go?
Sorry, I had another question about A7. Can you just explain the logic of adding this in? Because it sounds like you can't go anywhere without a badge, but if you don't have a badge, the principal will escort you. So
for some reason, state inspectors, when they come into the building unannounced, do not go through these procedures. They are not required to do so. So there are instances where there are people in the building, state mandated, who do not have to wear an identity tag, but they are escorted. So this is the one and only exception, is this state, the state auditors. And so we played around with the wording a couple of times to get it to the point where basically we're saying, teachers, you don't have to admit somebody into your classroom unless they're wearing that ID, unless, of course, the principal brings them into the classroom. Is that not clear still?
Well, I guess I'm just confused about shall and then the exception there. So,
okay. The teachers are not supposed to admit somebody into their classroom unless they have an identifying tag or badge. I think this is slightly modified even from what we agreed upon in the meeting.
Or probably by the lawyers. By principal or principal's designee.
Yeah, I think so. Unless the visitor has the identifying tag or badge or is accompanied by the principal or the principal's designee. Does that work?
Has to be principal. If you're out, but you're another administrator.
Yeah.
Is that all right?
What's the?
So we would change it this way. So identifying tag or badge, or accompanied by the principal or the principal's designee.
Yeah.
Okay, done. Thank you.
Got it. Want to hear the change to C7?
Sure. He's quick.
So if you look at the text, the third line where it says limited or restricted as appropriate, okay, I would put a period there, and the next sentence would read as follows. A maximum number can be set by the superintendent and further limited by the principal or teacher in the interest of maintaining student and building safety as well as an orderly educational program. Does that match with the board's discussion? I believe it does.
Mm-hmm. Can you read it one more time?
Can we have annually in August? Can we specify the timing there
for the last sentence?
I think that limits us. If there's changes that need to happen for unforeseen reasons throughout the year, I would not put August in there.
Well, I would say they're not going to get school. Or like keep that last part, or as appropriate.
Oh yeah, we're not going to take that out.
Yeah.
But just clarify the intended timing so that we have a deadline.
But I don't think you can have a deadline. If you set something in August and then something else happens, or there's another event, and send it in August.
That's in here, though, I think.
It is still in here. I'm not suggesting just removing the last part. I'm just suggesting clarifying annually when.
All right, let me get to improving that sentence in a second. I want to fix the previous one first, then I'm going to make a suggestion there. So the first sentence would end with the word appropriate, which you see in the third line.
Yeah.
The next sentence, after the word appropriate, I would insert a maximum number can be set. A maximum number can be set. Then it reads by the superintendent. After the word superintendent, I would insert and further limited by the. Then you have the words principal or teacher.
So could you read the whole thing?
I can.
Yes, I can.
Thank you. How about I read?
Go ahead.
Okay. Just to make sure we have it right. Okay, so it would say the number of visitors to any classroom, including to classroom parties or similar gatherings, may be limited and or restricted as appropriate. A maximum number can be set by the superintendent and further limited by the principal or teacher in the interest of maintaining student and building safety as well as an orderly educational program.
And then the superintendent.
Yeah, we'll go on with there, but we're going to mess with that sentence in a minute, so I didn't think.
Right. So we're good with the first two sentences so far?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So the third sentence, I believe the question is where we have the word annually, can we require that the superintendent make those communications about restrictions in or around August, right? would it meet with the board's pleasure to insert those words after the word annually, in or around August?
I would support this.
Or what happens if throughout the year
something... The rest of the sentence takes care of that, Maria?
Yeah, I'm not deleting the rest of the sentence, or as appropriate.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I'm just inserting.
Okay, fair enough.
So between the words annually and or, we would have in or around August. Annually in or around August, or as appropriate in the case.
Okay, so with your permission, I will read the whole thing as amended one more time.
Thank you.
Okay, all right. The number of visitors to any classroom, including to classroom parties or similar gatherings, may be limited and are restricted as appropriate. A maximum number can be set by the superintendent and further limited by the principal or teacher in the interest of maintaining student and building safety, as well as an orderly educational program. The superintendent shall communicate such limitations and or restrictions to the school community annually in or around August, or as appropriate in the case of any changes occurring during the school year. So who's somebody out here was the one who brought that up? Mrs. Damanakis?
Mrs. Rainey.
Okay, we got you. All right, with those amendments, yes, Mr. Hornick?
Again, sorry, college curriculum committee.
We were all new
10 English professors, and they drive me insane, so I'm sorry to pass it on.
We were all
D1,
yeah.
Just the sentence just drives me crazy. The principal or superintendent has complete authority? Like, do we need to, like, it just sounds confusing.
So in the absence of the superintendent, the principal has the authority?
Right.
That's what the meaning behind those.
Yeah, it read weird to me.
Yeah, I know, it does. Okay. But we made it consistent throughout, and right. That's the intended meaning of it.
We do.
So not the best English, I grant.
I
are you okay with what we did with C7?
Yeah, I think that was great, yeah.
Okay. Like, so everybody, any further questions on the policy? Okay, then I move to approve action 20P0008. Sorry, P0008. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you.
May we have a roll call, please?
Ms. Brennan?
Yes.
Ms. Brooks?
Yes.
Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Dr. Grantham?
Yes.
Mr. Warnick?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Ms. Walski?
Yes.
Dr. Imaki?
Yes.
And Ms. Graham?
Yes. Motion passes. Ms. Brooks, we're going to stay with you. Curriculum, please.
Okay. I know this is totally out of order, but I want to thank all the board for helping to make that policy happen and make it as clear as we could. Thank you. So curriculum committee also met once this past month, just last week, in fact. We have approved a number of field trips. I am jealous because the fourth graders get to go to the Liberty Science Center. We've got kids going back and forth between schools, which apparently in the state of New Jersey constitutes a field trip, and even though they're staying on the property and going from CTMS to SRS. There's eighth graders going to North Hunterdon High School to get scared out of their wits. There's a bunch of kids from fifth and eighth grade going to Spruce Run School, and fifth and sixth grade going to Spruce Run School. So Spruce Run is apparently the place to be. The Board of Education approves the preschool lottery drawing at Spruce Run School February 12th at 2:30 p.m. with a snow date of February 28th. Please mark that in your calendars. The Round Valley School participation in the Pennies for Patients program from March 3rd, 2020 through March 27th, 2020. Hand in your pennies, please. And the CTSD's, and this deserves recognition, 32nd straight year of participation in the Camden Collection Gift Drive. We also offer up an approval for a 4-day responsive classroom in-district training to be presented by Laura Jaw, December 11th and 12th, and January 15th and 16th. And that being that, I move for approval of items 20-CUR-024 through 20-CUR-029.
Thank you, Mrs. Brooks. Looking for a second, please.
Second.
Questions? Seeing none, may we have a roll call, please?
Sure. Ms. Emery?
Yes.
Ms. Brooks?
Yes.
Ms. Brennan?
Yes.
Dr. Grantham?
Yes.
Mr. Hornick?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Ms. Walski?
Yes.
Dr. Imaki?
Yes.
Ms. Graham?
Yes. Motion carries.
Thank you again.
Negotiations team for CTA has nothing to report this evening. Negotiations team for CTAA has nothing to report. Communications committee has met twice This year, during our first meeting, Dr. Cohen and the committee reviewed policies associated with the community and had ad hoc committees and communications, and then presented a robust list of ways the district meets those policies and how the district communicates with parents, staff, and members of the community. Specifically, Dr. Cohen referred to policies 9100, 9120.1, 9120.1R, and 9140. And in relationship to these policies, Dr. Cohen reported that they meet the policies by promoting public interest and participation in the operation of the school system through email blasts to school parents, staff members, and community members located on the district distribution list. Also engage community members through monthly school pages in the Clinton Township newsletter and letters for the superintendent of schools. There's a monthly Board of Education newsletter, email blasts again to parents, staff, and community members, and a district website main page and board page. There are press releases that go out periodically to all stakeholders. There's a weekly principals newsletter. There's public notices of board meetings, dates and times located on district website, township notification at that level, local to the local media, the state media, and on bulletin boards. We'll also publish meeting agendas on the district website and send that out to parents as well. Meeting minutes are published on the district website. The audio is published on the district website. There's participation by staff members at PTA meetings, foundation meetings, information is shared with staff on policies, and there are faculty meetings sharing out information as well. There's meetings with the CTA leadership and the administration here as well. Ms. Cohen, at the last meeting, after review of all this, had said that she was going to conduct a survey of superintendents in Hunterdon County and all superintendents throughout New Jersey on how they communicate with all stakeholders in their community. There was a cross-section of respondents that said that they had used Facebook and Twitter. Some had just used Facebook and some used Twitter. There are a handful of districts that do not have Facebook or Twitter and still use things like the Honeywell alert systems to communicate with stakeholders. During that meeting, Dr. Cohen recommended to the committee that the district develop and release a district Facebook page, and the committee agreed. Dr. Cohen also presented a concept called parent guides to the committee. This will serve as a guide for parents to follow their children's current grade level education and what parents can do at home to help support their child. And lastly, Dr. Cohen recommended to the committee that she hold superintendent coffee sessions. She'll be holding her first session in January and the second superintendent coffee this spring. We also did a review of current statute and policy, and it was also noted that whatever communications Dr. Cohen brings forward in the future, according to policy, if it's anything outside of instructional program, it's not prohibited. So we can't do any public relations type activities. That would be prohibited. And we also had a great lengthy discussion on what the state allows the districts to do as far as having employees or one employee be the communication specialist for the district. I think it's up to 50% now of someone's job they can do and be responsible for the communication of the district, but no more than that percentage of their overall job. There are specific school districts in the state of New Jersey that do have a communication specialist or a marketing PR person. Those people are grandfathered in, and so they were in those positions prior to the new law that came out. So lastly, there was interest in the committee as well to live stream board meetings. This was reviewed several years ago. that particular set of information and report by a prior superintendent is being looked for at this particular time down in the vault. And at the time it was originally presented to us, it was cost prohibitive to the district. But Dr. Cohen and her staff are looking right now to try to cost out the equipment and what that would cost the district to implement on a monthly basis. So that is the Communications Committee report for this evening. Moving on to the feasibility of closing the school, that committee does not have a report this evening. So I'd like to move on to old business of the board. This portion of our meetings for board members to ask questions about old business of the board on school-related matters only. It's not a time to make personal statements. Rather, it's time to review topics that have been previously discussed and bring up old topics relative to the business of the board. Does anybody have any old business?
I've previously asked, I would like to go back and ask for maybe student performances and student acknowledgments again. I think it's been a little while since we've had one, and I'd really like to see some more.
Sounds like a good idea. Thank you.
I'd like to just remind folks that the next Hunterdon County School Board Association meeting is on Thursday. The topic is mental health. They're usually really great conversations and an adequate dinner, so encourage folks to come if they can.
Adequate.
I like that.
Anyone else?
I know this is something that Rachel McLaughlin brought up regularly, and I would still like to ask why we don't have a recognition for student honor roll and high honor roll, and urge us to do something like that.
That's something that we would have to look into. I wasn't privy to those conversations, but I would certainly be interested in having those with the board.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else?
I just had an idea about the trying to keep costs down for taping meetings. Is it possible to reach out to North Hunterdon to see if they have students in like their AV class or in that group that may be able to earn some sort of credit or something, and maybe they can volunteer their time or be paid at a reduced rate?
I can look into that. Thank you. It's a good suggestion. Thank you.
Raritan Valley.
Sorry, one more annoying thing.
Raritan Valley, yeah.
They're almost non-existent anymore.
Pardon?
They go out of business.
I know, I heard.
Yep.
It's terrible. So.
Okay, right, moving on to another. Okay.
What's going on with the poor people over on, what is it, Charlotte Drive across from Round Valley? And the sewer issue?
We don't have that right now.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can we get an update?
We will. Yes.
Soon, Vito?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Anything else? Seeing none, I'd like to open the floor to new business, same parameters of old business in this section too. Any board members have new business they want to bring up?
I will just share with the board that I have registered for the 3Rs training, which is going to be happening on December 3rd. It's meant for new board members as a refresher for existing board members on roles and responsibilities and such. There are 3 locations, and I plan to go to the one in Pennington. So anybody else is interested?
December 2nd.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. December 2nd.
December
3rd. Oh, sorry. I am firing on
any other new business? Seeing none, I'd like to open the floor to second recognition of the public, same parameters that were expressed earlier in the public comment section on agenda items only apply here as well. If you'd like to address the board, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this to 10 minutes.
Among community members back in the September agenda, referring to item FF035, where the board approved a donation from the PTA for staff water at Round Valley and PMG in the amount of $1,200. The community members that I spoke with were wondering if we can get some follow-up on that, because during the time of the book fair, when various community members were in place in lots of the different schools, they didn't notice the water in the locations of the staff rooms, lunch rooms, at Round Valley and PMG, so they were just wondering if there was an update on what's going on with that donated amount. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we're stealing water.
Now, Reckon, just want to make a positive comment. I think it was last week that the Special Education Department, Ms. Ingram, had a get-together at the middle school. It was not a huge amount of attendees, unfortunately, but I can only hope that communication will keep going out to all parents in the school district, not just those with children with IEPs or 504, but really everybody, because I think everybody could have benefited from it, and I'm excited that there's more stuff coming up. So just kudos to her. She ran a very good session, and hopefully there'll be more coming and even better attended.
Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to close the floor. Mr. Polk, asking your favorite time of the meeting, sir.
Of course.
Only one more time.
Where?
We did
the
year.
We went back. Yep. Okay, where are while Senator Byron M. Burnett there, open public. What's that?
I'm sorry. If you'd like to make a comment, please
go ahead, please.
Open Public Meeting Act, NJSA 10:4-6 requires all meetings of the Clinton Township Board of Education be held in public, NJSA 10:4-12b, sets forth 9 types of matters that may lawfully be discussed in executive session, i.e. without the public being permitted to attend. And whereas the Clinton Township Board of Education has determined that the following issues are permitted by NJSA 10:4-12b to be discussed without the public in attendance and shall be discussed during an executive session. Whereas any pending or anticipated litigation or contract negotiation in which the public bodies or may become a party, any members falling within the attorney-client privilege to the extent that the confidentiality required in order for the attorney to exercise his ethical duties as a lawyer. The nature of the matter described as specifically as possible without undermining the need for confidentiality review and hearing information before the board pursuant to NJSA 18A 37-13.2, attorney-client privilege, personnel negotiations. And whereas the length of the executive session is estimated to be 60 minutes, after which the meeting shall reconvene and proceed with business. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Clinton Township Board of Education will go into executive session for the above stated reasons. Be it further resolved that the board hereby declares that its discussion of the aforementioned subject will be made public at such time as a reason for confidentiality no longer exists. Action may be taken upon return.
Thank you, sir. Looking for a motion, please, to go into executive session.
Motion.
Second. Ms. Brooks and Ms. Brennan. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions. We're in executive session. Looking for a motion, please, to reconvene the meeting.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Abstentions. Meeting is reconvened. Looking for a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Meeting is adjourned.